The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
A lot of craziness this week, and it's not going to stop between now and the election, whatever it is, or is it a C-election? It kind of doesn't matter, and I'm beginning to push the message out there that we really can't get hung up on labels, on names, liberal, conservative, and all. Don't get hung up on that. The issue is really now, I think, abundantly clear. This is going to be a choice, if we really have a choice, between a constitutional republic known as the United States of America and Bolshevik Zionist communism, otherwise known as the leftist progressive Democrat Party. That's it. And if you look at the top of the homepage up at altnews.net at Rents, you'll see it. Right there. I'll leave it up for a while. This is your choice in November. Constitution or communism? I'm not joking. Read what Biden has said he is going to do. Of course, not his words. It's written for him. But read what he is planning to do. And I say that in the traditional sense of someone actually being a president. This is bad, real bad. And unfortunately, Donald Trump has just signed, what did he sign exactly, a decree? Let me find it here. He has signed a paper. And I've got to find this. It was just here. Where did it go?
The Gremlins got it.
There's a lot of those out there. A lot of them work out of Tel Aviv. Let's see. There. Well, anyway, he's just signed something guaranteeing all DACA recipients will have a pathway to citizenship. All those invaders, I don't know how many million there are, they're all going to have a pathway to citizenship. Guaranteed. So, there you go.
And
once
the borders
again,
will be open, too.
What borders?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, no, this is... Things are crazy. Donald, listen to me, Donald. Don't do it. Okay? We know. Don't cater to the left. Don't fade. Don't crumble. Say what you said to all of us for a year and a half. No DACA. Stop with the reversals. You've got nothing to lose. You may have already lost. It doesn't matter. The issue here is one of now principle. When you can find it, and we are facing a Zionist, Bolshevik, communist overthrow of this country. Look at your history. Read what they did to Russia in 1916-17. How they did it. They went after the big cities. What are they doing now? Going after the big liberal, progressive, communist cities and trying to implode them. And they're doing a damn good job already. This communist virus, this malignancy, has really penetrated deep into the processes upon which we rely for an alleged representative government, the deep state. Communists are everywhere. They've been around since before FDR, and they have not gone away. They have been very stealthy, very clever, and what you see going on now is absolutely planned to the letter. All right. Now, that aside, we get to spend 2 hours with Admiral Cooper, who has dropped by. And in fact, speaking of dropping, has dropped anchor. He's going to be here for the next 2 hours. We're going to talk about, pretty clever, huh? Considering I wiped out.
Yes. Neat segue.
We're going to talk about Harry's upcoming journey to Argentina and his literal walk through history post-World War II, the end of the war, even before the end of the war. Germans were already being moved into Argentina. There was a deal made, and Hitler didn't get there by accident. The deal was a swap for freedom in South America, primarily Argentina, under the government of Juan Perón in the southern part of that country, in Patagonia, in exchange for the brain trust of Germany's scientific brilliance, which the Soviets desperately wanted to get, and they did capture a lot of it. We got the majority of it. It came over here under paperclip, and as many of you know, the Germans ran the American NASA space program. The director of NASA for 13 years, 12 years, was Dr. Kurt Debus, the director of Adolf Hitler's rocket works at Peenemünde. The same guy, he brought Wernher von Braun and so many engineers and scientists with him. That's what gave us our entire space program. So let's honor those men just for a second. No, they weren't all raving Nazis. I'm speaking for myself, not Harry Cooper or Shark Hunters. These were scientists. They were geniuses. They were engineers. They were 10 to 20 years ahead of the rest of the world in terms of technology. That's why we made the deal, okay? Tens, if not hundreds of thousands of Germans ultimately made it down to South America, different countries, but primarily the southern part of Argentina. That's where Adolf Hitler and Eva Braun went at the end of the war. There is zero doubt about it whatsoever. All right, Admiral, what you been doing?
working. Planning our next tour to Argentina, which is going to be the last 2 weeks of November. Also working on Clark McClellan's book, which is an incredible, eye-opening, revealing book, look into NASA. As you say, all the top scientists there were from the German rocket science at Peenemünde. And he tells things in that book that destroyed his life. 35 years with NASA, and suddenly he lost his pension. Right now he's only got one leg. The left leg had to be amputated. He's laying in an assisted living facility, which is a gigantic warehouse with people waiting to die.
They just inventory them. Yeah.
Excuse me. He has no money. But when you read this book, which will be available very shortly, we're taking pre-orders. Holy smoke, the phone never stops ringing. You'll wonder how this guy hasn't been clipped. He refers to Obama as a traitor several times, and Rumsfeld and Cheney, and geez, the list goes on, the people he refers to as traitors. He reveals that Challenger was sabotaged. And Houston, we have a problem. That was, Apollo 13, I think it was. He shows where that was sabotaged. He almost got killed once when he found somebody had messed with a fuel valve, and he wound up, he was in his hazmat suit, but he breathed enough of it to send him to the hospital, and it's anhydrous hydrazine, which is incredibly dangerous. So I'm almost done with that book. Clark is a brilliant man, 160 IQ, has incredible amount of stuff in this book, but, and I've told him this, so I'm not saying anything out of turn here, but he never should have gone near a computer. That's the most screwed up formatting I've ever seen. It changes from page to page, paragraph to paragraph. The margins change, the typeface changes, type size change, and there are hidden commands in there too, where I get it all straightened out and suddenly, bang, it's all back again. So I got three more chapters to finish and put in the photos, and then it goes to the publisher.
Right.
And it goes to the people.
I think my long-term listeners here, our radio family, went through 20 years with Clark here on this program, and we know a great deal about that book. And
this one's all 32 chapters.
Yeah, I know. And where did you get it?
Through him and you.
That's right.
So I had to get his permission first. And I was up there to visit him in his, we won't say where because we don't want him bothered, but in his cell, you want to call it? I don't know. It's a room. They've got hundreds of rooms in this facility, two people in each room, all just laying there waiting to die. He's got the better half of the room because he's got the window. The other guy is by the door. Mm-hmm. But Jesus, that's...
Well, and I tell you, in 20 years... Well, the program's been on 27 years now. I've never done more for anyone than I've done for Clark McClelland. I know his story. All of you listening, if you've been around listening for any length of time, know how much Clark has suffered physically, financially. He has really been dealt a rather dirty hand. And I still consider Clark a friend, even though he did some things that are very unusual. Put it mildly. But thank goodness that you worked the deal with him, and I was able to help, and the book is going to come out. And it's I always offered it in chapter by chapter, but now it's going to be a finished book as only you can put together, and it'll be first class. And
thank you.
I think it's a wonderful thing that that you're doing. And I always wish Clark the best. My God, did I did a lot to try to help. You only do so much, though, you know?
Yeah. He mentions you quite frequently in the book, all in a positive direction. So, and then after that book, we start on the next one, The Wolf's Drizzle, which strictly translated means the slobber from a drooling wolf.
Oh, it sounded like a piece of exotic pastry.
Well, you could call it that.
Strudel.
Drool
wolf
from a
strudel.
Wolf.
Wolf strudel.
Yeah, okay, well, that's close. Drusel, not strudel. Drusel.
I got it.
And it's filling in a couple of the blank spaces. We know Hitler was in his bunker on the 20th of April. We've proven that. One of our members was in there at the same time. It was his birthday. Peter Eric Kramer, otherwise known as Ali Kramer, commander of U-333, Knight's Cross winner. He was a member of Shark Hunters. He confirmed, he looked at his diary, Hitler was in his bunker on the 20th. On the 22nd, he was at Wolf's Drizzle. Why? Well, that's what's going to be in the book.
That's going to be another fascinating piece of information in the wall. And you are the wall builder. No one can come close to what you have contributed to history as it really happened. And you deserve, and I'm not blowing smoke here, more credit than I think anyone could ever give to one individual researcher, author, and brave man. You have gone where no one's gone before and risked your neck doing it to get the history of what really happened. So, bravo.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I'm too dumb to be afraid, I guess. But anyhow, you know, 22nd, he was there. 28th, he allegedly was back in his bunker shooting himself in the right temple, even though the photo of the dead Hitler has a bullet hole right in his forehead. And you can't, I don't care how articulate you are or reticulated, you can't point a gun at your straight at your forehead and pull the trigger. Yeah, nobody does that.
They don't shoot 90 degrees yet, no.
No, no. Anybody who shoots themselves, either in the temple or under the chin going up. And we know he did not. So we are 99.5% sure he was down in the area after Wolfstrussel, down near Salzburg. At least we know some of his high-ranking assistants, we'll call them, were meeting with the Americans, because the LAH, the first SS division, Leibstandarte Adolf Hitler, they were circling Salzburg to keep the Red Army out until the 9th. The surrender came in on the 8th, but these guys kept fighting until the 9th, and then they Hitler by then was gone up to Norway, and from there down to Uruguay, and from there down to Patagonia. So that's going to be an interesting book, too. Piece by piece, we're getting these books, we're getting the pieces of the puzzle. We know he was in the bunker on the 20th. We know he was at Wolfstrussel on the 22nd. And we know on about the 8th is when he got out of there was a special airfield by the town of Bad Reichenhall, which...
You're talking about May 8th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was general later on. At that time, he was only like a major. Gunter Rall lived in Bad Reichenhall, and that's where this special airstrip was. And Bad Reichenhall to Salzburg is, I'm just going off memory here, 20, 30, 40 kilometers, which is about 30 miles maximum, so it's not hard to drive there. And from Salzburg to Bad Reichenhall, and then in a plane and gone. Once the surrender went into effect on the 8th, the Allies pretty well kept, they grounded everything because the Luftwaffe was no longer flying. The tanks had stopped. Everybody was surrendering, and the Brits were in a hurry to get their people home. The Americans were in a hurry to send them to the South Pacific or to the Pacific and hurry the end of the Japanese part of the war. So a small airplane flying around, who's gonna notice? And then when he got to Norway, then that big Ju-390 V2 right. Took off, and down the road he went.
This safe haven that Hitler and Eva Braun and others went to in Patagonia at the base of the Andes, which is like the Alps, really was not something just thrown together in a hurry. This was something that was given a great deal of thought. And Grand Admiral Karl Dönitz said in 1943, the German submarine fleet is proud of having built for the Führer in another part of the world a Shangri-La on land, an impregnable fortress. And that's what they were talking about.
Yeah, some people like to think he meant Antarctica. There's something down there. We know there's something down there that you're not supposed to see, because Annette and I were going to go down there, and everything was lined up, and then all of a sudden it fell apart. The Monaco secret police beat the hell out of her. She showed me pictures of the bruises, and also they killed her little dog, little 6 or 7 pound French bulldog or whatever it was. But I am absolutely convinced this Shangri-La was actually an Elko down in southern Patagonia. It was impregnable.
What else would it be? Of course.
Yeah. And when Don Angel sent me that letter, and of course I thought he was nuts, but then later on I found out he was not nuts. He described when he went down there, and I think it was September of 52. I think it was September. Anyhow, he said everything was covered with snow, because that's middle of winter down there. And the way he described the buildings, and I've been down to Inalco several times, I'd swear it's just, he was describing Inalco right up to the guest houses and everything, which is where we stayed last November when we were down there. We stayed overnight in one of the guest houses. Talk about rustic. Talk about roughing it. Jeez.
Well, it didn't used to be that way.
Oh, no. No, no. Of course not. But it's pretty rustic now. The one bedroom had a double bed and a single bed, and one of our guys there took the double bed, and there was an electric receptacle there, and he has one of them CPAP machines, so he had to plug in. Martine and I and a couple other, we had to sleep out in the main room by the fireplace, which was nice. We each had a little cot. And, you know, if you're going to be on an expedition, don't expect a five-star Miami Beach-type hotel. You're going to have to rough it. And about midnight, the fire had burned itself out. It was a bunch cold. But we had a lot of blankets.
Very good. Well, if you had been there 75 years ago, now...
it would have been... All the furniture would have been there.
Oh, that's true, too. All right, hold on a minute. We'll be right back.
Roger that.
Admiral Cooper. We're going to take a look at a lot of pictures. We have a great photo gallery up, so you can pull those up right now, and we'll start to take a look at those when we continue. Okay. And welcome back. Let's go to, if you're not there, go to guests and click on Harry Cooper's link right below his name. Take you to the gallery of pictures for our next 90 minutes. We're going to take a look at some very interesting things. If you're new, just scroll down on the, look at the left-hand side. It's right there. Jeff Rentz program, tonight's guests. Click here and you'll see Harry Cooper. Under Cooper, photo gallery preview of the trip coming up this fall. And you'll see the gallery page pop up. The pictures are all thumbnails. Click on them and they become quite nicely sized, large. And where do you want to start?
Oh, I don't know. Start at the beginning, maybe.
What? We don't do that here. We do things unusually here. Different.
Yeah, I guess.
Unique. All right. We'll go to the beginning. Picture number
one. These are the photos we took during our last trip to South America last November. And we'll be doing a lot of the same things, but we have added some stuff that we don't have photos of yet because we haven't done them yet. Anyhow, photo one. I guess that's a beauty contest. The one in pink wins. No, these are two cops.
Number one. You've already graded the winner. It says number one, right?
That's
right
it. These are two cops in Buenos Aires. They've got all sorts of different types of cops. They got city cops, state cops, federal police, because Buenos Aires is like Washington, D.C. It's a federal zone, and so everybody's got to have their own police force in there. We stay at the hotel is run by the Argentine Navy, right on the corner of Florida. I'm pronouncing like an American now, not like down there, because it wouldn't sound the same. But Florida and Corrientes. And Florida is a walking street only, and all the high buck brands and all the regular stuff are there, you know, Gucci and Dooney and Burke, they're all there. Plus also you've got the 25 hour a day quick marts. It's a great place, totally safe. In the daytime there are all sorts of people selling stuff that the indigenous people made up in the mountains, and they bring it to the city. They've got guys doing caricatures of you. And then in the evening, they've got the tango dancers out on the street. It's just a hell of a lot of fun and very safe.
And give us a date again. When's the when is the tour? September what?
I believe it's 14 of November, and it goes for 2 weeks.
Oh, it's November. I thought it was October. So it's
November.
It's after the election here, so America will have largely been burned to the ground by then. So you can go after.
We after hope it that. Doesn't burn to the ground.
Well, last year we do it in a second. Yeah.
Yeah, I know that. Last year we went late October into early November, and I missed my son's birthday, and it was the 9th of November. Wow. So this year.
I knew it was October, but it was last year. Okay.
Yeah, but it was 9 November was my son's birthday, and so last week of October, first week of November. So this time I'm home for my son's birthday. I don't know if I'll miss Thanksgiving or not. I'll manage. Then we look at number two. That is the Plaza Hotel, which is one of the most upscale hotels in all of South America. And back in the war years, it was probably the only ultra-high scale. And that is where Martin Bormann lived for 2 years after the war. And I went in there, not last year, but when I first went down there, 2008, my first trip. And I went to the desk manager, Senora Rodriguez, nice lady. I introduced myself, told her who I was, what I was doing. And I said, my research shows that Martin Bormann lived here for 2 years after the war with two beautiful young women. And she says, yep, in room 740, the presidential suite. But she says, we never knew anything about the two women. So I said, what, you knew Mormann was living here? She says, yeah, everybody did. But, of course, he got killed on a tank battle near the train station.
It's called bilocation. He was dead in Berlin, but somehow alive in Argentina.
Yeah, so many people. Well, when you read Clark's book, there's another dead guy that surfaces. He met and he worked with Obergruppenführer Hans Kammler, the third most powerful guy in the Reich at the end of the war, who committed suicide or had his guards kill him dead so the Allies couldn't get him, but yet he wound up still alive working at NASA, Hans Kammler.
Well, we know Clark met, I don't think I'm, we've talked about this on the air with Clark in the past. He met Kammler at least once, if not multiple times.
Several times.
In his work with NASA over the years. And They just picked up the best of the best, brought them over here, and we had, all of a sudden, a space program. And that wonderful color photograph of John Kennedy down at NASA, sitting in that room on a chair right next to Kurt Divis, is one that I'll never forget. It's just, it tells so much, that one picture.
The space race was won by the Third Reich, although they were over here working for us, but it was all the Third Reich scientists. And he also met another guy. We're still not sure. He was introduced as Dr. Grüne, and Grüne is the German word for green. And I don't know if it's the same Grüne, but nom de plume or whatever, that new name was given to Gestapo Mueller when he came over to the U.S. Now, we don't know if Dr. Grüne and Mueller was the same guy, but that was the new name that they gave to old Gestapo Mueller.
Okay, very good. No, still to this day, I guess no one's been in that house, huh? Still locked up, as far as you know.
That's correct. Right. Yeah, Jeff's talking about the house down in some dinkwater, little dinky village in Argentina where Mueller lived up until he died, and the house has been locked up and sealed since, I think it was 2000, but I'm not sure. And we are trying to find the person who has the keys and the authority, and we want to go in with the camera. And
there's some real treasure in there, I'm sure, historically speaking. Yeah.
And like I say, we go in with the camera. That's all we take is photos. Nobody touches nothing. Right. Yeah, we're historians. We're not grave robbers. However, if I was to run across a pile of Nazi gold, well, that'd be a different story.
There's, okay, with me.
There's more, you know, there's Nazi gold. If you put it all together, probably 10 times more gold that the Nazis were attributed with than what is in the entire world.
Right.
Every German submarine sank was full of Nazi gold. Every German airplane, Nazi gold. Every, Jesus. Now there's, what was it? No, not the tunnel. The Nazi gold train in the tunnel. That was 2 or 3 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Now there's another one. Somebody's come up and they're absolutely certain they found all this Nazi gold. Yeah, Jesus. Nobody's ever come up with any Nazi gold.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, there probably is some gold stashed in several locations. How much?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
But the powers that be have clearly looted a lot of it, and they're not going to tell anybody. But if some Germans captured after the war were thought to have knowledge of secret locations, believe it, they were coaxed into giving it up.
Sure.
That's just the way it works. So, yeah, but there are some fascinating things. There's the one train that's entombed in the mountain, but it doesn't have gold on it. It was just a freight train.
Right. We usually visit that bunker complex, although we cannot get into the bunker that has the train in it. But this year, you know, we're not going to Germany at all because of this scamdemic. But next year we'll be going to North Germany, Berlin, and also Southern Germany, and we'll go into that bunker complex. But like I say, that train is in another whole section, and it's walled off by either explosions or cave-ins or something. You can't get there.
Well, you know, it's too bad, because if the Germans were smart, and they used to be, they'd go in there, clean it up,
Put up a turnstile.
Can you imagine? Oh, good. Absolutely. People would pay $50 to walk through that turnstile. Each one of them.
Well, they'd pay a lot, that's for sure. Oh, well.
All right. Yeah.
Okay. We'll be here until 3 in the morning doing pictures at this rate. But anyhow, go quicker.
Let's jump up to the Xiao Xiao. We can do that.
Okay. Skip number 3. And go up to number 10.
Yeah.
That's us walking up to Xiao Xiao, a guy whose back is to us. I think that is Roger, but I'm not sure. It's either Roger. Yeah, I think that's Roger. And the guy in the blue jacket looking at us, that's our mutual pal, Martin. And we're heading up to Xiao Xiao. This was a place built 1938.
Now look at the building. Listen to what Mr. Cooper is saying. That building, that huge hotel, which we're going to walk into in a moment, was built in 1938.
Yep.
In the middle of nowhere.
Oh boy!
Nowhere.
In the middle of nowhere. You're not kidding.
Why and who and how? And all of you listening can fill in the blanks, but you newcomers probably won't be able to. But look at that marvelous building. And it did burn during construction. They had to actually rebuild it. But
right, that was in 1939.
Take us indoors.
Yeah, okay. And it's spelled LLAO-LLAO, but they pronounce it Xiao Xiao. I don't know how you do that, but that's Castellano Spanish down there. Okay, right. Indoors, just magnificent. Built with German money, incidentally. 10A, That's the main kind of reception room. There's a bar off to the right, and then hard right behind us is the breakfast nook. We always go there for a snack because the rooms are incredibly expensive. Everything about it's incredibly expensive. Go to 10 Baker, looking down the hallway.
Look at the beams. Look at the timber. All of it timber. All of it from the area down there. Built.
Yep.
The people that built that, the architecture of the inside and everything, just really remarkable. Gorgeous.
Yeah, without question. Then we go to 10 Charlie. That's down the stairs where I had been standing before up on top of the stairs to take the picture, or actually uh-huh. Roger has. This is the big open area. And then we go to 10 David, down another hallway. Look how fantastic it is. It's just magnificent. I don't know what's above 5-star and 5-diamond, but this place does it. And then we go to 10 Edward.
Now here's another thing. Look at the carpet.
Oh, yeah.
One long piece of carpet. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it had to be joined here and there, but it is flawless. It looks like one carpet.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, this probably cost a couple bucks. and then we go to, 10 Easy. That is the breakfast nook. And again, it's just fantastic.
That's a
place.
Nook? A nook just for breakfast? Looks like a 5-star dining room. It's gorgeous.
Yeah. And then number 11, that's my friend. Jeez, do I look horrible in that photo. But that's my friend Lucilla. And when we go down there this next time, we're going to stay at least one night there, even though it's god-awful and expensive. But I've known Lucilla since
she was
2008.
A child.
Well, yeah. 2008, when she was just a hostess.
Gopher.
You know, she was a hostess that would, you know, just tell everybody what you needed to know about the place. But now she's the boss.
Agreed.
So
she's made it all the way up. That's neat.
Yeah. So she says, "Oh no, Harry, for you guys, it's not expensive." I says, "It's got to be at least $200 a night, even so." And she says, "Nope, for you guys, nope. We'll talk."
So you're planning on staying at the Xiao Xiao?
Trip. One or two nights.
Nice.
Just to experience the luxury. These will be down days without a whole lot of exploration, just living and relaxing.
Great. Oh, wonderful. It's a beautiful place. Stunning.
Oh, man.
Built again.
And
no one was there.
Right. Nobody. Nobody was there. The town of Bariloche, San Carlos de Bariloche, is about 3, 4, 5 miles away. And back in those days, it was two streets long, and that was it. Now there's about 150,000 people there. It's a big tourist area because it's just magnificent on that huge, big lake right at the foothills of the Andes. But back then, and as you know, during Eisenhower's administration, he came down there. And then during his administration, Carter was there. Clinton was there. Obama was there all during their presidential terms, and John Kerry was there just before he left as Secretary of State. So, you know, it's a magnificent place, but so what? There's plenty of magnificent places. So you don't have to go 7,000 miles out into Booneyville. So you got to wonder why. We haven't found out yet, but we're looking. They were there for a reason.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
And we've been told what the reason is, but we aren't going to say it until we back it up a little better. Capisce?
Okay. Yes, yes. Number 12. We're moving along rather quickly. We're going somewhere.
We're going somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah. Incidentally, on this coming tour, we're not going to fly from Buenos Aires to Bariloche like we've done every time so far. We're going to go by road, and we're going to visit all sorts of places that have had sightings of U-boats, and there's one place where there's caves. The marks are still in the stone where they dragged equipment ashore from the submarines. So it's going to be a whole different thing, and looking forward to it. Now, number 12, that's the remains of a bunker, not to be confused with the bunker, the U-boat bunkers on the French coast. Those things were built to withstand massive bomb attacks. This one was
a military troop bunker for defensive purposes.
Exactly. Kaserne, as they call it in German, a place where maybe a few platoons, and they'd have sleeping quarters, they'd have a galley, cooking area, and their whole job was to watch for boats or seaplanes heading for the long leg of the lake where Hitler's estate was in Elko, and to let the estate know that there was a boat or a plane coming. This is at one end. The other end, I don't know if we got any photos of it here or not yet, but no, I don't think we do. One at the end. That is the so-called Saracen Tower. That would spot boats coming from the other direction, and that's on private property. Mm-hmm. Nobody's allowed there. When I was there 2 years ago with Martine, we tried to schnooker the caretaker. We stopped by his house first. And Martin was talking to him, because I have no Spanish at all. And these two huge guard dogs come running out, and they were just my buddies. They were slobbering all over me, and they had this soccer ball. So I kicked the soccer ball, and in my right hand I had my movie camera going, and in my left hand I had my snapshot camera going. And every time I'd kick the soccer ball for these dogs, I'd kick it closer and closer to the Saracen Tower. And I got within about 30 feet of the tower, and I hear, and those photos are on my website, incidentally. I hear, "Harry, Harry, we must go now." "Oh, okay." He's aware of what we're doing. He said, "Please do not make me be a violent man." I said, "Okay, let's not make him be violent." So we left. But this year, we have his permission. The owner's permission to come on the property, go into
The same guy?
Yeah.
How did you swing that?
You'd be surprised what a couple pictures of Ben Franklin will do.
Yeah, well done. Yeah. Boy, so, yes, I've lost a few Bens myself down there.
Yeah, I know you have. But with the caretaker, probably just Alexander Hamilton, that's it. That's all we'll need.
Oh, good. Good job. Very good.
Yeah. So
this is real history. All right. On one side of the inlet, you had the concrete bunker. It was around the clock, 24/7. Highly alert. People were in there guarding the entrance up that inlet you'd call it
a finger of the lake, the inlet,
whatever. And the other side would have the tower, for which... Mm-hmm. Tremendous commanding views of everything. So
yeah,
the idea was no one gets near there. And if you see the backside of it...
You can't get to an alcove by boat except by going past these 2 points.
That's right.
So...
Just amazing. Okay.
Nummer 13.
Yeah.
That's the Hotel Campana. I think Campana is a Spanish word for bell. It's not a hotel anymore. It is an office complex where you can rent out a couple of rooms for your office, etc. But the guy who was the manager here, I forgot his real name, but his Spanish name, his nom de plume, was Juan Mahler. And he's the guy that Sam Donaldson went down to out back in 1995. Uh-huh. And he met up with Juan Mahler. And Mahler saw where the interview was going. He said, no, you don't want me. You want to talk to Priebke over there, because Priebke's a much bigger guy. So we are in sort of half-assed contact with the son or grandson, I can't remember which, of Juan Mahler. But he's a professional snowboard instructor. He's either down in Bariloche or he's in Austria, depending on where the snow is, and every time we're going to meet, he's at the other end of the world. Mm-hmm. So he said he's got a lot of things to show me, but we haven't gotten together yet. But that's the Hotel Campana. Then skip over 14. Then we got 15, which is the town square. Well, look at that architecture there. Not the big building in the background, but the the Bavarian style architecture right
this
there.
This is Bariloche.
Yep, in the town square, city center, whatever you want to call it. They were having some kind of a shindig there for kids with bicycles. They'd ride around cones and stuff like that. It was pretty nice. They had a couple fire trucks. Mm-hmm. And then 16, that's General Rocha. He, boy, oh boy, the damn liberals would love getting to his statue because his task back in the early 20th century, like around 1905 on up, when Argentina opened up all this land down there as grants to Europeans, mostly Germans, some Italians, they were farming sheep farms and cattle farms, et cetera, cattle ranches, and they had these pesky and indigenous Indians were there, and so General Rojas went down there on a mission of depopulation. They didn't even bother having a war with these Indians. They would just find an Indian village, surround it, and kill everyone in sight, and then tell the landowner, okay, this area's cleared, so probably shouldn't let the people know where it is, because otherwise these damn Antifa guys are going to be down there.
No, don't. Just leave it.
Anyhow, and then what
I
do we
don't
got?
Like that big building behind that nice Bavarian building.
I should have shot from a different angle.
All right.
But then again,
it's not the best architecture. It wasn't German.
No, it reminds me an awful lot of when I was in the Soviet Union.
That looks just very sterile like that.
Yeah, they clapped together sterile stuff, which was falling apart by the time I went there. I was there in 1991, my first time, and the stuff was already falling apart.
All right, so, very good. We have to pause now for our little top of the hour break. We'll come right back with Admiral Cooper and continue our preview of his November trip upcoming, which you can participate in. And
SharkHunters.com.
Nothing you've ever done. That's it. SharkHunters.com. Be right back. Hold on.